You're listening to Fundraising Radio, a podcast about fundraising for early stage startups. The major rule that we follow here is no bullshit on this podcast, no music to relax you, no advertisements of our sponsors. And in this new season of Fundraising Radio, we are changing things up and talking about sales for early stage startups instead of just the fundraising portion of it. And today's guest speaker, we have Lisa Falzone, co-founder and president at Athena Security. And in the past, Lisa sold one of her companies, Revel Systems. And in this episode, we're going to talk about both things, which is the buildup of the past company and the current company that Lisa is working on, and how different is Lisa's sales approach to these two companies. So Lisa, let's kick it off simply. Just give us some background on yourself and on Athena Security.
Yeah, so great to be here. So I started Athena Security after I sold my last company, Revel Systems. We grew it from 0 to 800 employees and sold it to private equity in 2017. Then kind of retired for a little bit and wanted to do something more altruistic afterwards, and wanted to go after the school shooting problem that was happening in schools. And so wanted to create technology to help save people's lives. And so that's exactly what we've done at Athena. So it's a brief background about what I've done.
Perfect. And can you actually, on our pre-interview call, that was the instant use case that I thought of, but it can also be used in a bazillion other ways. So shortly, it is a detector of concealed weapons, right?
Mm-hmm.
How is it different from metal detectors, just so that everyone is on board here?
Yeah, so our product is concealed weapon detection. So with metal detection, you have to, you know, stop anyone with metal that has metal on their body. Mm-hmm. But with this, we let things through, like cell phones, keys, and then we stop someone if they have a weapon. So, you know, it's more frictionless than a metal detector where it's a pass-through system. Obviously, not everyone is pass-through, because if they do have a weapon or something that looks like a weapon, they would get stopped. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't slow down the flow of traffic. And so when someone, and so that's how it works.
Perfect. Good to know. All right. In that case, let's start by talking about the previous company that you mentioned that you built from the ground up and ended up selling, Revel Systems. Mm-hmm. What do you think allowed you to get to the point where, you know, you could actually find someone who is willing to buy the company? What do you think was the key parts of reaching that success? I know it's a broad term, so let's focus on the sales part of that question.
Yeah. I mean, so we started the company in 2010. And really, it was a pivot from doing online ordering. And so my co-founder and I, Chris, who's also my co-founder at Athena, we were out there selling different restaurants and retail shops online ordering at the time. And everyone was like, you know, that's cool, but what I really need is a point of sale system. And that was right when Steve Jobs had just announced the iPad. And we were getting just a lot of demand for a point of sale system. People were like, you know, cool, ordering system's cool, but I really need, a new point of sale system. So we just thought it was such a huge pain point in the market and pivoted to do iPad point of sale, and really just never looked back and scaled from there. We raised Series A, Series B, Series C. And then with the last transaction of Series D, my co-founder and I exited majority of our shares to the private equity firm.
Sweet. Always happy to hear some nice exit stories. In that case, let's talk about the changes in your sales approach. On our pre-interview call, you specifically mentioned the book, which I forgot to write down, by the way. So if you named the title and the author, that would be great for our listeners. But the book is focusing on selling the product before actually creating the product, which is a very popular idea in the startup world, but still a lot of founders do not follow it or even attempt to follow it. So in your case, how did you apply that strategy to both Revel Systems and then to your current company, Athena Security?
Yeah. No, it's a really good question. So the book is by a Stanford professor, Steve Blank, and it's Four Steps to the Epiphany. And it's a really dense book, but the bottom line is sell the product and then create the product. And so that's exactly what we did at Revel. We, you know, we're kind of out there selling it, and then we wanted to make sure there was a ton of demand, and then, and which product had a ton of demand before we then created it. So we actually, when we started Revel, we were in a meeting, so, like I said, selling the ordering app. And it was our, you know, it was this client, Michael Appert's out in Sausalito, and he's like, cool idea, kids, but what I really need is an ordering, a point of sale system. And so I looked at him, I said, we'll build that for you. And so we basically kind of like pivoted on the spot, but we had gotten a lot of demand, you know, a lot of demand and feedback from the market that that was the pain point. So we really sold the product, and then, you know, we're like, hey, as long, you know, we'll build it for you as long as you buy it. So he signed the sales contract, and, then we went off to build it. And then, you know, from there, we just kept growing. With Athena Security, I think I was a little bit, you know, I don't want to say arrogant, but, you know, I wasn't as humble as when I was starting Revel Systems. You know, I had done it before, I had a success, and so I didn't really follow that framework. And I really came at it from more of an altruistic point of view of like, hey, we want to go after this huge problem, gun violence, it's happening in America. We want to use technology to help solve the problem. And went through it that way. And our first product was natural light weapon detection. And there was demand, there was interest, but kind of like the ordering app where there was like some demand and some interest, it wasn't like hot. So it wasn't like, I think there's like various degrees of like product market fit. But anyway, so then through selling that, you know, it took a little bit longer, but people were like, hey, this is cool, but you know, I can only see a notify a brandished weapon. I want to see concealed weapon. And so then we, you know, started building the concealed weapon detection product, and that's what we have today.
Gotcha. So let's, before we talk a little bit more about Athena Security, let's talk about that pivot for Revel Systems. I've heard a lot of stories where founders make major changes based on the advice of like an individual contributor, or even if that contributor is extremely wealthy and promises a lot. In your case, why do you think that it was justified? You know, was the contract so big, or did you just have a lot of faith in that specific individual? Did you see that same feedback coming from a number of people? And then,
yeah, because it wasn't just that individual. I mean, the individual, I mean, at that point, we thought it was pretty, like a pretty big restaurant. I mean, he was like a franchise, and there's three or four stores in Sausalito. And to us at that time, that seemed pretty big, but we didn't just build it for him. Obviously, like we had gotten feedback from other, you know, restaurant owners that we were selling to of like, hey, cool, like your ordering app's cool, but I need to integrate to my point of sale. Then we would call the point of sale company, and like they didn't have open APIs, and it was like not cloud-based, and just it just seemed like such a pain point from an API perspective, like integration, and then also just from a customer demand, like everyone kept complaining about their point of sale system. They just really, really complained about their point of sale system. So we're like, you know, that's, you know, and every single, and we also liked it because every single restaurant typically has to buy a point of sale. Whereas like they don't have to buy necessarily like an ordering app. Like it was mission critical for the business. And so then we knew that there was demand.
Mission critical, that's a good term, which a lot of founders should definitely think about. Otherwise, if it's not mission critical, most likely it's just a nice to have kind of solution. So let's get back to that book. I do like that whole strategy of selling before it's built. So for Athena Security, how did you manage to do that? Because I would imagine that building a concealed gun detector is kind of complicated. So how did you start selling that before it was actually developed, or did you already have a demo? What was that stage when you decided to start, you know, reaching out to people and trying to get contracts?
Yeah. Well, actually, so we were selling the visual light weapon detection to a large mall, and this is like right before COVID. So, you know, the world kind of changed with physical security with COVID, you know, but now it's back. So thank God. But anyway, we're selling this visual light weapon detection, and we had sold it to this mall. But then the mall CEO was like, you know what? I really, really, really want concealed weapon detection. And his idea was like, hey, do it thermal, like do it with thermal imaging. And we looked at thermal imaging and we're like, it's not really that accurate. It only picks up on, you know, heat differentiation. So like at best, it's between like 10 and 40% like accuracy. And he's like, I don't care. That will help me even more than the visual, right? Because it's like, at least some people we can detect coming in with a weapon, even if it's only 10 to 40% accurate. So we're like, wow. Like this Yikes. Person is, yeah, this big, large mall CEO was willing to pay for something that was only 10 to 40% accurate. Now, our product right now is way more accurate and we don't just rely on thermal. But yeah, so that's kind of how we knew. Did we sell it before? Yeah, right now it's different than the SMB market. So we sell primarily to enterprises, where enterprises, mm-hmm. a lot of these enterprises that we're selling to, you got to sell to the security person, you got to sell, you know, to upper management, then they got to sell it to the board. Then there's like procurement, then there's like approval process. So it's a different sale than the SMB where you could get quick yeses, but we knew we had like the yeses. You know, we had at least the verbal yeses before we went and built it.
Gotcha. Interesting. So the verbal yeses is always good. My standard advice to founders is usually don't rely on verbal yeses. As long as the money's not in the bank, that does not count as a yes. Did you see a lot of the conversions from those verbal yeses to actual paying customers after you've
developed the solution? Yeah, almost all of them. And I would agree. I think your advice is correct, because I do think that you can get in a trap where, again, it's like a nice to have versus like, I really, really need this. And I think that is why you're like, hey, like get the actual money mm-hmm. in the pocket. But again, it's like, it's a lot different starting to sell to enterprises and SMBs. So, we had very strong, like verbals that it was just like getting the paperwork done. And sometimes the paperwork takes like 5 months with these enterprises.
Yeah, that's the downside of the enterprise. Why I don't like them, to be honest. too long.
No, I think it's really hard to sell to the enterprise being a startup, because it's like have pressure. Yeah, so you have pressure from your investors to make 10% month over month growth, and that it's just like not really, you know, it doesn't really work like that in enterprise.
Certainly does not. Everyone wishes, but nope. So we'll talk a little bit more about the sales part here, because again, there are so many applications to your system in the States, especially with the current climate rounds. Everyone knows that mass shootings every other day or daily, and pretty much every industry that has some kind of public involved in it in a physical space kind of requires that solution. So how are you staying focused and not just spreading yourself too thin, where you're, you know, falling into that trap of trying to reach too many, and eventually that becomes kind of spray and pray approach that doesn't actually hit anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think that every founder has their different approach for this. I mean, I would say that like our biggest verticals, surprisingly, like we started the company for schools, and schools are definitely like a big vertical, and we see that as a huge growth opportunity. But our first main vertical has actually been healthcare for emergency rooms. And so we've really, really worked hard on like knowing what the customer's needs are with healthcare, what their software needs are, what they care about, what the hospital security people think about. And so it's like, so as far as like customization, we had to really make a decision on like, do we want, because my co-founder and I are, you know, our background is SMB. So we have like a special place in our heart for SMBs, mm-hmm. you know? And so we've gone and pitched, you know, some SMBs, you know, jewelry stores and that kind of thing that still deal with gun violence in a little bit of a different way. But, and they're like, great, but we know the product right now is like just too expensive for them. So it's like, we could go after the SMBs and sell them hard, but it's, you know, you're going to get a lot better pickup with the enterprises. So I would say we've really focused on the enterprises with this product. And then just focused on this healthcare vertical first, and then we're kind of expanding out.
Perfect. And good luck with the enterprise. It's always a tough industry to get into. And speaking of tough industries to get into, but again, as a startup, you usually don't have anything. You don't have ICP. You don't really know how to pitch. You don't know what clicks with people, what kind of keywords to use. You don't know shit. You just go in blind. So for founders who are listening to this right now, who have kind of a product or who have a good idea of what the product is going to be look like, gonna look like not to be. What would be your advice for them to start making some kind of sales, even if it's gonna be like a soft commit plus, I don't know, maybe pre-order at even 90% discount, because that's still better than nothing. What would be your advice to those founders?
Oh, my advice is just go out and talk to people. Like that's what the Steve Blank book talks about, is like get out of your, now we all work out of our homes. Get out of your home, get out of your office, and literally go talk to people. And sometimes that's hard for engineers, right? Like they don't really want to go talk to people. They just want to like sit and create these like amazing products, but like you might not know like if they're going to sell, right? And so you have to be an engineer that partners with a really good product market fit salesperson, or you got to kind of become that yourself. So I would say get out of the office, get out of your computer, get out of being on your computer, and really go talk to people that are going to be end users. And in B2B, my experience is all B2B. I think it's slightly different with B2C, but yeah, I would say if you're doing a B2B company, just really, really go out and talk to as many people as you can.
Why do you think it's different for B2C? I actually think that B2C is even easier to talk to customers, because you might as well just go quite literally on the streets, busy street, within like notepads, and start pulling people aside, unless you have a very like very targeted market in your mind. So why do you think it's different or harder?
Well, I just think, I just think B2C is just different, right? It's like more like, it depends on what kind of B2C company you're building, but like a lot of it is like, okay, free user growth, and then, eventually we'll monetize later, or, like we're just trying to get users, and then eventually we'll monetize later and like figure out the business plan later. B2B is like, okay, we understand our business plan like from almost day one, or you should understand your business plan from day one after you get your product market fit. But I agree. I think B2C is you still want to talk to users, and see what they're willing to spend their time on.
That's Fundraising Radio prides itself on being very specific on advice. So I'll try to narrow it down even more. I've heard it a lot, go out, talk to users. And I'm sure a lot of, or pretty much every single listener of this podcast has heard that before. And it is vague. You're like, do I just go pick up a phone and start calling people on Google based
Well,
on the search? Or what would you do? Or, what did you do for Ethereum Security? How
I
did
think
you
that's a good
start
question.
talking to people?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. So what we did is we first started talking to people because we were selling something different, right? So my co-founder and I, we did come up in an office or a home or whatever, like the ordering app idea. And said, hey, we think this might be a good idea. So we went and tested it and actually started selling it. And then we like pivoted, same industry, but like we pivoted a little bit,
And how
right?
did you start selling it? That's the real question. Did you start cold calling them? Did you just
Oh,
like
we
search
literally,
hospitals in my area?
yeah. So for Revel, we, so for
Let's
Revel,
do Ethereum
we,
Security, since it's more recent
oh,
and
Athena,
kind of,
yeah. What was the question again?
How did you start making those sales? How did you start,
Oh,
going and talking to people?
because we launched with a visual light weapon detection. And so we had inbounds from the visual light weapon detection. And so we just started talking to those people. And that just seemed like a nice to have product, not a I have to have a product.
Right. So how did you get the inbounds right away?
The inbounds, we did a lot of press.
Oh, all right, that makes sense. Okay, that's a good strategy too. And that's inbound is so much better than damn outbound. Outbound is a pain in the ass, but it has to be done quite frequently.
Yeah, but when I like that's, I mean, we got a lot of press because we were, second time founders. But the first time, like we weren't, right? I was 25 at the time when I started it. And that we were just kind of walking door to door talking to restaurant owners.
is a painful process. I've done that in the past. Damn, what have I not been called there? Love that part. but that was still one of my best startup experiences. Anyways, quick advice to founders who are listening to this right now. If you have to make cold calls or like do a very uncomfortable kind of procedure, what I found out to be useful is having one ear with some kind of distraction, like music or something like that on low volume, and the other headphone with actual telephone call. So dial in one ear listening to music, the other ear listening to the clients, figure it out. It helps quite a bit. You can dissociate a little bit more, but still listening to the clients. So help me in the past get over the fear of cold calling, and works like a charm.
I don't really like cold calling. I think
no one does.
Yeah, no one does. Yeah, it's
super awkward. The thing with that strategy, I'm telling you, I've been stressed about it for like maybe a day or two, and then I kind of just like, oh, okay, I'm not, you know, if it goes south and they drop the phone, I still have the music in the other ear. I don't care. Moving on. Yeah. So it helps a lot. If you have to do those, definitely try it out.
Yeah, I would only do it if you have to, but like for the restaurant industry, it was actually better just to like literally go in the restaurant and like talk to them. Right.
But then it takes you like maybe 5-10 minutes per restaurant of walking in.
True, but people are way more likely to like talk to you in person.
I actually had, when I was doing the restaurant startup of my own, I had more success cold calling, surprisingly enough. Yeah.
Well, maybe
it's just volume at that point.
It's just the way to go, you know? Half, you know, listen to your music that pumps you up, and half, you know, listen to the...
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the way.
100%. So now that we covered the old strategy of cold calling, which by no means is required, but again, some industries just driving it, because again, some founders don't expect a cold call, you know, B2B founders of some kind of AI startup, most of them list their actual cell phones on Crunchbase. It's just that simple, and they just don't change it ever, and just reach out to them and say like, hey, found your number on Crunchbase, here's what we're doing, we're open to chat. That works. Yeah. Straight up works. Well,
another thought I had, and I've never really done it before, but it's like, why don't people just go to industry events? So it's like they're selling into the security industry where there's like heads of security. Just go to, just like get a conference ticket and then like go to the networking events and just like you're right there with the clients. Or you're
Oh, yeah, 100%. That also does work. It kind of can be expensive depending on the conferences. Yeah. But it does work. 100% does. And just FYI for people who are trying to do that, if you plan to sell, reach out to the organizers of the event so you don't just get a normal ticket, because you get a side eye if you're just an attendee trying to walk around and sell the hell out of everyone there. So you have to be like a sponsored visitor or vendor with no table, some kind of that deal that they provide most of the time. Because again, if you're coming in as an attendee and trying to sell to everyone at the event, might go south for you. So make sure to take a look at that. Make sure to not just take advantage of organizers who are putting their time into that, and be respectful. So with all that old strategy in mind, which is going in person and cold calling, I cannot believe we're discussing that in 2023, but it does work. So with all that in mind, Lisa, what do you think is the best technology to use right now, especially with the developments in AI space for sales? Some amazing tools are coming out. Have you seen anything that's particularly useful that you've recently employed?
Good question. I mean, I think we're just kind of still using a little bit old school. I mean, I'd love to say, hey, we're using ChatGPT on an everyday basis, but we're like not really doing that. I think just like a variety of different approaches, advertising, PR, going just to like being industry experts is really good. We've hired some really great industry experts on our team that are, you know, well known in the industry and can kind of go to, you know, be an expert and go do speeches about it, and it's just like educational speeches about it, and it's just a great way to get our name out.
Oh yeah, 100%. That's definitely a working strategy, especially if you're selling to enterprise, which means that if you get one account out of that big speech that it will cost you like $5,000 to set up, you're still sad. In that case, I'm going to throw in a suggestion there. Again, obviously ChatGPT, everyone knows about that. There are dozens and dozens of absolutely killer extensions. The one I recently started using is called GPT for Sheets. Tool is an absolute killer. If you're working with Excel or Google Sheets, that will improve your life, like, I don't know, 20 times maybe. Google it. It's going to be there. It's amazing. Sometimes it lags, granted. Sometimes it's slow, granted. But again, it's improving on a daily basis, so check it out. I'm going to leave a link in the description of this episode. And we are moving on to our last question of today's episode, which is a very standard question that I've been asking for 3 years and a half at this point. So Lisa, before the listener drops off, or right after they drop off, what do you want them to do? What is one thing that you want them to do to improve their company, to improve their sales? Just one thing that will have an actual effect on their success or get them closer to that success.
Yeah. I guess the one advice I have is, like, be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And as long as you're putting yourself out there, you're doing better than one of those cold, timid souls that know neither victory nor defeat, because you're out there in the arena. And I am paraphrasing like a Teddy Roosevelt quote, but, you know, you're in the arena, and it's like, if you get rejected, it's like, actually think of that as a good thing, because you're actually doing it, versus those people that are too afraid to try.
Oh yeah, 100%. Granted, some rejections are memorable. I, for example, still remember my days of walking door to door to restaurants and someone calling me snowflake that has nothing better to do. But, you know, moved on. Still remember it though. So if you think something is too uncomfortable for you to do, that's also fair. Don't push yourself too far or you'll burn out. My piece of advice is going to be, as always, check out the description of this episode. I'm going to leave a bunch of links there, a link to the book that Lisa mentioned, a link to Athena Security, and link to the GPT extension that I've mentioned for Google Sheets. And I'll also leave to our Substack, because a lot of content that I've recently produced is going there instead of the podcast. So check that out. And as usually, have a good day.